from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers. Today, we'll learn about a new initiative to address the mental health needs of Black Milwaukeeans.
One thing that I've noticed about the system that is in place, everybody that comes for help does not fit in the same box.
We'll tell you about the film Speak, which follows students on a persuasive speech team. Plus, we'll help you plan a trip to the Apostle Islands and learn what there is to do on the water there.
Since the Lake Superior is so important, any time you can spend on or near the lake is important. It's like the blue beating heart of this area.
All of that is coming up on Lake Effect. But first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers, and thank you so much for joining us. Empathy Mental Health is a new Milwaukee-based nonprofit that's dedicated to addressing the critical mental health needs of Black Milwaukeeans. A group of Black professionals with a range of expertise came together over a shared concern about a lack of access to quality mental health care. They hope a new approach begins to break down existing barriers and disparities. WUWM's race and ethnicity reporter Taryn Powell is joined by the chairman of the board of Empathy Mental Health, Dwayne Berry Sr., to learn how the organization plans to support Black Milwaukeeans.
The problem is lacking access to treatment. There's a lot of things that play in that. Little to no insurance. Lack of education and knowledge about where they can get services. Racism is a big factor. Not having enough therapists that look like themselves. Historically, racism has caused many of us to not trust. And so there's a lot of issues that play into the community not getting the services that they need.
Something I hear a lot when, you know, I do have these conversations with mental health advocates or providers or people just like that work in that space and know the inner workings. It's like we've been, you know, saying for years, Black folks aren't one of the reasons, you know, they aren't accessing these resources. Like you said, racism, people don't look like us. That kind of cultural competence isn't there. And it all builds. It all builds
exactly.
On each other.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And one of the biggest problems, too, is the system that's in place has the tendency to throw medication at people. Mm-hmm. That's part of it. But what we're going to do as empathy is not just throw, but we're going to do medication management, okay? But along what goes with that is you give them the medication, but there's got to be some type of therapeutic treatment that goes with that. One thing that I've noticed about the system that is in place, everybody that comes for help does not fit in the same box. They're trying to put everybody in the same box, and we're unique in our own way. Let's say, for example, Tom has bipolar issues. Mary has bipolar issues, but their bipolar issues affect them in different ways. Mm-hmm. So what's going to work for Mary is not going to work for the other person. Empathy, it's going to cause us to do what is called reassessment. When a person first comes into the program, listen and hear what the client or the patient has to say. Because there's some traumatic event that has taken place in their life that really has not been dealt with. The only way I've seen it dealt with is throwing medication at the situation. But we want to do an assessment that we might look at the whole person. When a person comes to us, first of all, we're going to deal with the physical. If you're not physically in good shape, then you're not going to deal with yourself mentally. So we're going to make sure that they have a great physical. Then we want to try to find out what was that traumatic event in their life that caused all this to happen. And from that, design a care plan to fit that, knowing what type of therapeutic treatment this person needs versus just sticking them in some mental health group and throwing medication at them.
So let's talk more about how empathy, mental health, like the entities involved, how those voices came together.
Right now, the board of directors are made up of different organizations. We have a bishop representing the spirituality in the church. We have a psychiatrist and psychologist that have their own private practices. We even have a lawyer that's involved. We have a nurse that specializes in psychology. We have case managers from different organizations that are on the board. We have finance people on the board. So we brought all these people together to the table, I should say myself and another person, and just begin to have some conversation with coffee and talking about the issues that they see from their individual perspectives. And listening to their individual perspective said, you know, we all seeing the same thing. We're all seeing the same thing. How can we come together instead of you doing your thing over here, you doing your thing over there? How can we come together collectively to provide a service that's really going to impact? Because in the Black community, mental health is critical. It's a critical issue. And so it began there, just professionals coming together with that concern and saying, you know, let's do something about it. Let's stop talking about it. Let's put something together. And so from that, we begin to develop programming based on all of the people that are involved, experiences. From that, we have group homes. We have supportive living. We have apartments that are geared for people with mental health that we've connected with. And so we have drop-in centers. We have places where people can get clothes. We just have a host of community-based organizations that we are partnering with. So that person that comes to us has a wraparound of services. This is personal for me. I've been dealing with anxiety for years, okay? But it's under control. I've had two brothers that died as a result of substance abuse, addiction, and alcoholism, all because they could not get their mental health issues settled. So they went to the drug. They went to the alcohol. They went to those other things looking for comfort. So this thing is personal.
So I was reading in the press release when we talk about some of the voices that are part of the leadership team. I did see that one was someone from like law enforcement. And I think that stuck out to me because particularly when, you know, someone is having an episode and the police are called, that can be a life or death situation for people. And so that's why I was like, I want to ask about this. Is that why a law enforcement voice is there to really kind of trying to help law enforcement really improve how to handle these situations?
Exactly, exactly. The law enforcement person can come to the table and talk about their experience dealing with mental health, people on the street, and how to better handle them. One of the things we're looking at with empty mental health is having a connection where the police come or are involved with somebody that's having a mental health crisis, that we get a alert. And somebody can come out and be with that person to help the officer. Also, we're going to be putting on different workshops to help people, officers, firefighters, social workers, how to deal and handle people with mental health issues. And so we're going to be doing a lot of education. One of the things I love is the alert system we're putting together, that when an officer has been dispatched, it'll automatically come to us and we'll meet that officer there. That will, I think, have a great impact on whether the officer gets hurt or the other person gets hurt.
Okay. And so just referencing back to, you know, the press release, I'm looking at it's mentioning how empathy mental health will generate income. And immediately I'm thinking of funds coming from the federal government, right? And I think a lot of different organizations are feeling the impact of like funding being cut and services in different communities. And I wonder if that is something that, you guys, the board of Empathy Mental Health, is like thinking about and kind of like our plans in place should that be the case. I just wonder what the status of those thoughts are right now.
Well, we're not putting all our eggs in the basket of county funding or state funding because we know how that goes. So only a small percentage of our income we're looking at getting from funding sources. We'll be able to, because of the professionals that we have on board, to be able to bill insurance companies. If a person comes in and is not connected to any type of insurance, we have people on staff that can get them Title 19, get them connected with different insurances. What little county funding we do or will get, we'll use those for people with no insurance to pay for them until we get them connected to an insurance company or a card or so. So yeah, we're not putting all our trust in government funding at this time. So we're not very concerned about funding sources, because that can dry up in a minute.
I'm also curious, like, is there any significance behind the name?
Is there any significance behind the name? Well, if you look at that word empathy, it means a few things. It means responsibility. It means compassion. It means care. That was the reason why we picked that particular name, because that's what we're about, being responsible, caring, compassionate.
Yeah, I always like to ask folks about significance and in
That's
titles of things.
powerful. That's right. That's powerful.
Dwayne Barry Sr. is the chairman of the board of Empathy Mental Health. He spoke with WUWM's race and ethnicity reporter Taryn Powell. And did you know you can listen to Lake Effect as a podcast? Search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcasts to download and listen on demand. In about 10 minutes, we'll help you plan a trip to the Apostle Islands. But first, we'll learn about the film Speak, which follows students on a persuasive speech team. That's coming up next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. A new film called Speak follows five high school students as they prepare for and compete in the National Speech and Debate Championship. It depicts the highs and lows as the students express themselves through oratory, a form of persuasive public speaking. WUWM's Mayon Silver is joined by the film's co-director and cinematographer, Guy Mossman, to learn about the film.
So, first of all, great movie. I just wanted to detail for people the difference between oratory, which is also known as speech, and debate. Do you, after having worked on this film, do you now know the difference?
I should. And if I don't, I need to go make another film. Because, as you suggest, they're often confused, believe it or not. And I think most people think about debate as the sort of academic competition or activity that we see at the high school level. And what I was amazed when I discovered this world and found that really debate is just a small subsection of this enormous world, and it keeps getting bigger and bigger. And I think speech is attractive to a lot of kids because it's so creative.
So oratory is interchangeable with speech, and that's persuasive public speaking, and debate is rather structured argument where there are teams with opposing viewpoints. Would you say that's accurate?
I would say that is, but with speech, you have all these different types of event. And oratory is one of those. It's the one that is written from the ground up. Every word is the student's own word with help from colleagues, parents, and coaches. but they are really responsible for putting together this persuasive argument. And that is what really drew us to oratory, that they were really learning to advocate for something really meaningful to them and thereby being very personal.
Totally. So this film follows five high school students. They have a super big range of life experiences, and there's a lot of hard topics that they're talking about, from gun violence in schools to LGBTQ rights to support for those with disabilities and even suicide. And it seemed like the ones who found success in oratory, like you're talking about, with that persuasive from the ground writing, all tended to have some sort of personal or lived connection with what they're talking about. Is that what you found?
Yeah, they call it the heart story. And every great oratory speech has to have a very clear and a heart story that's powerful and compelling. And the heart story is their personal story. This is what they call it in that world. And it brings this sort of conceptual and the universal to, it grounds it and brings it back to the student. And at this level, it's very important. And so you're judged based on how well you can do that as well.
So, okay, there was a cut in the movie where Esther, who's a two-time national champion in oratory, and she's from Florida, she's reciting her speech, and her coach is there. And so let's listen to it.
Politicians claim to protect children, yet 9 million kids live below the poverty line.
Beat.
And 12 million will go hungry today. Politicians claim to protect children, yet there have been 28 school shootings this school year. 31,780 children murdered over the past two decades, and only one piece of gun reform legislation.
Sorry. I have chills all over. I hated stopping.
I had no idea that there were coaches. I don't know why that was a surprise to me, but what did you find were the ways that coaches guide these young participants?
Yeah, we love this scene because in the case of Ryan, who is Esther's coach, he spends a lot of time on the delivery of the speech with the students and has been doing that as part of his style. So in addition to helping them to craft the argument and to do the research and to think about and just kind of help the student to think about their topic from different points of view and different angles, he spends a lot of time with students on their delivery. And that's part of the coaching. Coaching is such a demanding activity. Like these are teachers who are working full-time jobs teaching. And then in the evening, afternoon, they're staying at school and working, many of which working for free, 5 hours with students, helping them to craft their speeches. And a lot of it is simply just listening, I found. And coaches have to be able to demonstrate the ability to listen very carefully and to also show a level of empathy, because, you know, students are putting themselves out there and in a way that would make anyone uncomfortable. It takes a lot of courage to write something very personal and stand up in front of others and try to convey an idea that can be very complicated. And so they have to be able to just sit down and listen.
There's so many factors at play when someone is engaging in oratory. You know, what do you think makes the most sort of successful kind of speech?
It's really fascinating because, as you see with Mafaz, our other character from Minnesota, she cries in her speeches. And because we see her routinely crying in her speech, and this is about the pain and some of the trauma that she was experiencing at a young age as a recent immigrant from Sudan, being in situations with her peers at school that were humiliating or where they humiliated her. She felt that pain. And I think when we see it happening repetitively over the course of the year, you begin to wonder, is it sincere? But I truly believe that it was sincere. It's looked down upon in general. It's very risky to cry during your speech because judges can think that you're insincere. But she decided she wanted to do it anyway. Her coach, I'm sure they had a conversation, and it's just common knowledge that crying is not something that is helpful. It can hurt the speech. So why take that chance? But Mufaz, in another way, she really was daring in her execution, in her projection, her performance. She had a lot of things in there that were not typical and were risky. And that was made for a really exciting speech.
That is super fascinating. I did notice that as part of her speech. She seemed very innovative in how she was in other aspects of her speaking. Actually, there was a scene that's one of my favorite moments in the film when she is at her school in Minnesota and they're I'm assuming it's their speech team and they're doing like a psych up moment. I'd like to play that for you.
Let's wake up our faces. Mwah, mwah,
mwah, mwah. I slit a sheet, I slit, and on that slitted sheet I sit.
Who's gonna win?
We're gonna win.
Who?
Us.
Who?
Us.
Louder.
Apple Valley.
Hey, P.
Hey, P.
P-L-E.
P-L-E.
V-A-L.
V-A-L.
L-E-Y.
L-E-Y.
Hey,
P-L-E. P-L-E. P-L-E.
So that was such a fun scene, and it was so wonderful to see these students kind of get as riled up as students do for a sporting event or for anything else like that. And you ended up going as part of this film to the National Championship of Speech and Debate that involves 11,000 competitors, coaches, and judges. In this year, in 2024, they descended upon Iowa. What was that like? What was it like being there and filming there? What was the vibe like there?
Oh, there's really nothing like it. You have to imagine, in this case, it was, Des Moines is not a huge town. So when 11,000 people take over this, I mean, it feels like they're taking over this city. It's exciting and thrilling for me anyway, because I love to see young people get excited about ideas and about the exchange of ideas and about really engaging. It really restores my faith in our democracy and the future where we're going, to see young people just so excited about talking about who we are and who we could be and how we could be better and where we're falling short. And I think being able to do that in a way that is very inclusive and the Nationals is where you see everyone together. This is not everyone who practices or competes. There's over 140,000, I think. I think it's roughly 140,000 students registered in elementary, middle, and high school around the country, if you can imagine. So of that, 7,000 kids will come to the Nationals, will be able to qualify. And then there's another 4,000 judges and coaches and parents and press there. So it is, that's where you get the 11,000. But to behold and to experience and witness that is thrilling. And it is a sport in every way, I think. The level of competition, the way this, the level of care and obsession, if you will, discipline that is required is matches anything you would see on ESPN.
Totally, totally. You gotta love it. Well, Guy Mossman, co-director and cinematographer for the film Speak, thanks so much for speaking with us about it.
Thank you, Mayan. It was a pleasure.
Guy Mossman is the co-director of Speak. He spoke with WUWM's Mayan Silver. The film is showing at the Downer Theater this afternoon as part of the Milwaukee Film Festival. Milwaukee Film is a financial contributor to WUWM. Nothing worse than being thirsty. Ooh, 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 ooh. I'm no good at being you, my philosophy. the Apostle Islands offer some of the most stunning views in Wisconsin. You'll find miles of shoreline with unique features, like sea caves and sandstone cliffs, best viewed from the waters of Lake Superior. It's an ideal place for kayakers to visit and explore. But there's also lots to do on land, from scenic beaches to exploring local indigenous history. In this month's Wandering Wisconsin, we'll help you plan a trip to the Apostle Islands. Lake Effect's Becky Mortensen is joined by Jeff Rennick, Executive Director of Friends of the Apostle Islands, and Amanda Weibel from Travel Wisconsin.
So, Jeff, we're coming up on some of the best months to visit the area. What is it like to come to the Apostle Islands during the spring and summer months?
Summer is prime time for the Apostle Islands. Water temperatures in Lake Superior become almost welcoming in the warmer days of summer. You can start to slip your shoes off and walk barefoot in the sand, and the bays begin to bloom with sails from the sailboats. The sky is blue and the lake turns that wonderful shade of blue as well. But I'd also recommend people don't stop paying attention to the shoulder seasons, spring and fall. Even the winter can be mesmerizing up here. I'm a big fan of the Northern Lights, and snowshoeing on the lakeshore in winter can be just amazing. We're coming up on Bayfield in Bloom, which is a festival May 30th to June 7th. There's truly wonders here in every season, but summer is, of course, prime time.
I myself visited in spring, and it was great. All seasons are great in the Apostle Islands. So there are wooded hikes and beaches, but one of the unique features of the Apostle Islands are the sea caves and the sandstone cliffs, best viewed from the water. What can you tell us about this unique land feature of the Apostle Islands and how people can best view them?
The sea caves are accessed from the Myers Beach area in the western part of the lakeshore, and it truly is one of the prime attractions for the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore. Grottos and caves and spires carved by the artistry of Lake Superior on a set of cliffs that stretch for about 2 miles. It really is one of the greatest sea kayaking experiences in North America. There's a number of guiding services that offer full and half day excursions to the caves, but you can also explore the area on foot through the 6 mile lakeshore trail that starts at that very same Myers Beach parking area. The trail skirts some of the cliffs, offering dramatic views of the lake and the sea caves underneath you. And I'm proud to say that starting this summer, the Myers Beach area will be featuring an all-accessible walkway, replacing the 45-step stairway, making that beautiful and important part of our lakeshore accessible to everyone.
That's great. So you can go to these islands and camp. And what should people know if they are planning to do an overnight on one of the islands?
It's important to know that camping permits are required for all of the island and even the mainland lakeshore camping sites. You can make reservations through recreation.gov, but it's best to do your research first because there's a lot of choices and a lot of things to keep you safe. So there's very valuable information about all of that, both on the website of Apostle Islands National Lakeshore. And Friends of the Apostle Islands has a wonderful section called Discover the Islands. It's a whole section of our website at friendsoftheapostleislands.org. There are a constellation of choices, so do your research first and then go to recreation.gov to secure your permit.
I also want to talk about Madeline Island. So people can take a ferry from Bayfield to Madeline Island. And can you just explain what that island has to offer?
There are a lot of things to do on Madeline Island. It's important, I think, first of all, to recognize that that's the only one of the 22 Apostle Islands that is not a part of the National Lakeshore, but it does have an array of wonderful things to do. There's a beautiful beach at Town Park. There's a state park on the island that features some wonderful cliffs. A great trail system at the Madeline Island Wilderness Preserve. There's a great museum there. It's a great biking area because it's relatively flat. Both of our daughters learned how to bike on Madeline Island. There's the Madeline Island School of the Arts events. And it's important to contact the Madeline Island Chamber of Commerce for a schedule of events and more ideas.
And there is a lot of history in the Apostle Islands, but one thing people might enjoy is the collection of historic lighthouses. What can you tell me about those, Jeff?
The Apostle Islands has the greatest collection of lighthouses in any national park unit in the entire country. There's 8 light towers on 6 different islands. My personal favorite is Sand Island. It was the only lighthouse made from native materials, in this case, native brownstone. So it kind of looks like it belongs on the cliff since it was carved right out of that stone. But it was also the focal point of what at one time was a very vibrant summertime culture on Sand Island. And it's accessible by a 2.2-mile all-accessible boardwalk that is just about completed, which Friends of the Apostle Islands was honored to play a small part in the funding for.
And there is a way to see these lighthouses on a boat tour, is that right?
Apostle Islands Cruise Service, which is housed here in Bayfield, offers a gamut of trips from a grand tour where you see much of the islands to specific lighthouses. Some of the trips depend on water levels at times. Raspberry Island is the most famous, and that one is staffed by National Park Service interpreters. And I know that almost every season will go to Raspberry Island.
So, Jeff, you mentioned Bayfield. It is kind of the hub of the Apostle Islands. If you want to do anything there, you kind of have to start in Bayfield. So, Amanda, I'm going to turn to you. What are some things to do in the Bayfield area?
Well, Bayfield is actually Wisconsin's smallest city, Becky, but if you are a fan of outdoor recreation, art, culture, or local food, you could actually spend days exploring the city and the surrounding area. Certainly one highlight for the summer in Bayfield is Big Top Chautauqua. It's a seasonal music venue that attracts both local and national acts. I mean, legendary acts like Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson, and Brandi Carlile have all performed there. And it is such an unforgettable experience. You take in a show under their signature big blue canvas tent. It's a ton of fun. It's a great experience. Bayfield is also known as the berry capital of Wisconsin, so you're going to find a lot of local farms and orchards that have you-pick berry patches, and depending on what time of year you go, you're going to be able to pick strawberries, raspberries, blueberries, and more growing in Bayfield. I also highly encourage a visit to Frog Bay Tribal National Park. This is the first park of its kind in the country. And the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa invites the public to experience this natural gem. It's on the shores of Lake Superior, known in Ojibwa as Gitchigumi. And it's this beautiful winding path through a rare boreal forest. And it takes you out to 4,000 feet of undeveloped shoreline at Frog Bay. It's absolutely stunning.
There are also a lot of little shops and places to eat. What are some places you'd recommend that people check out?
Bayfield really is known for its thriving art scene, so definitely check out some of their galleries like Rabbit, Bird, and Bear. It is a shop full of many one-of-a-kind finds. They really focus on local and regional artists and a really strong emphasis on Indigenous artists as well. So you're going to find works from Red Cliff member Rabbit Strickland, whose paintings are absolutely moving, among many, many others. And when you get hungry, Morty's Pub is a really good go-to option if you're looking for some tavern-style food. That's where you can get your Lake Superior caught whitefish. They are also known for their burgers, lots of other great pub food. Manny Penny Bistro is another great spot. They have breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and really offer an eclectic mix of dishes that is going to satisfy everyone in your group. They've got Mediterranean dishes, they've got stone oven pizzas, fry bread tacos, and they even serve a local specialty, which is whitefish livers.
So, Jeff, like you said, there are lots of islands to pick from, tons of beautiful beaches, and countless options of things to do on a trip to the Apostle Islands. So, for each of you, what is one experience that people absolutely need to have on a visit to the Apostle Islands?
Any of the things that Amanda mentioned certainly would work as one-of-a-kind things that you must do. But I'll go back to something my friend commercial fisherman Julian Nelson used to say, the lake is the boss. And to me, anytime you come to Bayfield, since the Lake Superior is so important, any time you can spend on or near the lake is important. It's like the blue beating heart of this area. So kayaking, sailing, boating, even just walking the docks or finding a small stretch of beach and taking your shoes off to walk in the sand, the lake is not only the boss to me, it's the main attraction, the diamond of blue. For anyone to visit Bayfield and the Apostle Islands, I think the must do is to spend time on or near Lake Superior.
I love that. And Amanda?
Well, I have to agree with Jeff. I mean, it's so hard to narrow it down, but I think he said it so well. It's such a draw. And whatever level of adventure you're looking for getting out on the water, it's available to you. So if you want to do the kayaking, if you want to do charter fishing, or if you'd rather go on a leisurely lighthouse cruise or sailing excursion, those are all options available. So definitely recommend getting out on the water to experience the beautiful Apostle Islands. And then I just have to echo Jeff too, to say, spend some time on a beach. Find a spot to go put your feet in the sand, step in the water in Lake Superior. It's so clear. It's so beautiful. I think Wisconsin is an underrated beach destination for sure. The Apostle Islands are such a wonder of Wisconsin. We are so fortunate to have this natural gem in our own backyard.
Well, Amanda and Jeff, thank you so much for joining me for Wandering Wisconsin.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
Amanda Weibel is the Communications Officer for Travel Wisconsin. Jeff Rennick is the Executive Director of Friends of the Apostle Islands. They joined Lake Effect's Becky Mortensen for Wandering Wisconsin, our series where we help you plan a trip in our home state. You can find more travel recommendations at WUWM.com. Coming up, we'll have an in-studio performance by local indie rock group Vanity Plates. That's next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers.
Fingers numb, flexing, making sure they still can bend. Empty-handed, coming back.
A lot of bands focus their time on recording and releasing new songs and albums, but Milwaukee-based band Vanity Plates has a different approach. Vocalist and guitarist Alex Shaw says for their group, writing, crafting, and playing songs has always come first. He joins me in studio along with bassist Peter Cellino and drummer Shane Tim ahead of their tour that kicks off at X-Ray Arcade on May 13th. Here they are with their previously unrecorded song, Fingers Numb.
Fingers Numb by Vanity Plates. Thank you all so much for joining us here in studio.
We are happy to be here. Thank you.
So happy to be here.
So let's start with you guys. Tell us a bit about yourselves. How long have you been playing together?
Hey, great question. So this band has been around since, I believe, 2017, 2018. Shane, our drummer, and myself, Alex, have played in various bands since we were in high school together in Green Bay. Pete has been playing with us for a few years now. I don't know. I'm really bad at dates. I have no idea when anyone joined.
I think I jumped in 2020-ish, 2021 maybe.
Oh, yeah. Pete was our
COVID
pandemic
hiatus.
Bassist. Yeah. Yeah. We started kind of playing together again before things shut down in wave two.
How would you describe Milwaukee's music scene, especially the part of it that you are in?
I mean, very diverse. you know, it's I'm in my 30s, so I've seen a lot of changes in it. You know, I used to be more on the folky side of things. But man, especially, I guess, in the last few years, just so much excitement, a lot of support, and even like just from different genres supporting each other. Yeah, there's a lot of energy right now.
What do you think that's due to?
I think a lot of things. You know, I think, you know, myself just hearing like a new generation of kids, you know, pick up instruments and seeing like, I don't know, more diversity in rock and roll has been really cool. It's been a weird time for a long time, and that usually brings about some pretty cool music.
There are a pretty staggering amount of like small venues putting on shows with like capacities under 100, you know, kind of just all over the city, all through River West and, you know, Bayview and all over the place. So there's a lot of opportunities for bands to find a place to play as well.
Sure. I saw you guys out at Kochanski's, which is, yeah, a relatively small venue, I would say.
Yeah.
What are some of your top venues that you've gotten to play in the city?
I mean, we love Cactus Club. We play there all the time. Shout out to Kelsey and the whole staff there. They really, honestly, they're a huge part of what makes the scene so great and really cultivate a lot of creativity. So we love that. Linnemans, big shout out to Linnemans. When I first started playing the scene, Jim was one of the first people that really propped me up at the open mic there, and always a pleasure to play there.
There's a 10-year-old picture of Alex on their website advertising the open mic night still.
Yeah, I'm the face of Linnemans open mic.
Very nice. So you have another couple of songs for us. Tell us a bit about this next one.
Yeah, this one is called Bad Brain Day. And this, like many other songs, is about existential dread. You know, I find most of my songs are pretty personal and kind of come from a place of me trying to process my own feelings about things. And this one, I think, is kind of epitomizes that. You know, it's just about feeling real weird about the state of the world and my place in it and, you know, processing that.
All right. Well, here it is, Bad Brain Day.
It's all too much and I am not enough. Take a page from my friends who have figured out their stuff. All I take away is it will all work out someday. Every road I try to take sends me back the way I came. I'll believe anything you say about me. Reluctant I can be to defend my POV. Nothing in this world turned out the way I thought it'd be. I was wrong, oh, am I wrong? So maybe wrong's all I can be. Don't be mad if I ask if there's more. I'm not trying to be greedy, I just need to know the score. Don't be mad if I ask if there's more. I'm not trying to be greedy, I'm just thorough. It's all too much and I am not enough. My thoughts race in frantic circles, I was speaking off the cuff. And I was making jokes so you put no weight in my words. You can laugh or brush it off if I say something too absurd. Like the plastic in our waters found its way into our blood. There is cancer in the meat, pesticides sin in our lungs. And when we're lowered down into the soil, we'll just add to the pollution like two tiny pools of oil. Something good. Nothing in this world turned out the way I hoped it would. It feels wrong and I feel wrong, but would I fix it if I could? Don't be mad if I ask if there is more. I'm not trying to be greedy, I just need to know the score. Don't be mad if I ask if there is more. I'm not trying to be greedy, I just am I.
Brain Day by Vanity Plates. Both of the songs we've heard from you, and I believe the next one as well, these are all unrecorded songs, or at least unreleased songs. Is that right?
That's correct. So the last one is the only one that's actually recorded, but they're all unreleased. Yeah. We're sitting on maybe, I don't know, probably could be an album and a half, two albums worth of material Easy. Right now.
We bring back the other songs you've been working on, too. I don't know, man.
That's quite a bit of music out there. You guys are currently recording at least one album.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about that.
Totally. So right now, we just kind of built a home studio. We're not very good at being like a band, like in the way you're supposed to be. Like we don't, you know, you're supposed to like write something and like work on it and record it and promote it and be like, this is the first song off our new album. We just kind of write and then play it because there aren't really any rules and we get excited about the new songs and just want to play them. But we have a little bit of backlog now. We're excited to record them. It's just about finding the time to sit down and do it.
Sure.
That was a very generous we for built the home studio.
Okay. I mostly built it, but you guys helped fund it.
True.
As someone who has built a very shoddy home studio myself during the pandemic, I can understand how difficult that could be.
Yeah.
What has that process been like? What have you been doing?
Mine's also shoddy. Well, my partner and I bought a house in October in Andaris Park, and that's always been a dream of mine. So, I mean, there's always more that can be done. But it was really just getting some soundproofing on, trying to figure out the acoustics, got a really large rug off Facebook Marketplace, and then just trying to find, you know, just like the best deals we could on like good old mics and like, you know, just kind of bare bones everything we needed. And I've always had like a decent demo-y singer-songwriter-y recording setup. The big thing was getting it set up so we could record drums. And honestly, it sounds pretty dang good.
You did great.
Yeah.
Very nice. So it seems like there is a lot more to come from Vanity Plates, but maybe in the, I don't want to say distant future, but yeah. a little further out.
We're not making any promises. We don't really have a plan. I do think, you know, we maybe are kind of trying to step away from the idea of making albums because it's just, it's really hard to promote an album. It's just like the music landscape has changed so much. So I think right now, really the focus is just honing the songs and, you know, recording the songs and kind of figuring out how we want to release them whenever.
Sure. All right. Well, you have a third song for us. I will say the title is very long. Can you tell us a bit about what inspired this?
Yeah. The song is called I Know I'm Not Responsible for Your Feelings, But Ellipses. We just call it Feelings. And this is really just, you know, I've been married now for 4 years, and I've been with my partner for about 10. And everyone goes through it in relationships. You got your ups and your downs. And I feel like sometimes when you're in your downs, it's hard to remember when there were ups. And just trying to like break from, you know, your perception of something and the reality of something when everything in your brain feels real at the moment. So this is kind of about just like me trying to navigate that and get us back to an up when really you can't force those things.
For sure. Well, here it is. I Know I'm Not Responsible for Your Feelings, But by Vanity Plates.
You feel alright, can you describe your mood? I know it's bad because you look right past me. Lately it's bad a lot, you know. You're right, I'm sorry, it was dumb to bring it up. Self-centered way to think that the worst instincts can get the best of me, but you're always feeling, you're always feeling,
you're
always.
You're listening to I Know I'm Not Responsible for Your Feelings, But by Milwaukee-based band Vanity Plates. The group is kicking off a new tour at X-Ray Arcade on May 13th. At WUWM.com, you can hear the full versions of their in-studio performance. And that wraps up today's show. Thank you so much for being here with us. I'm Joy Powers. If you missed any of Lake Effect this week, you can find all of our conversations at WUWM.com. If you'd like to take the show on the go, you can download the Lake Effect podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Tomorrow on Lake Effect, we'll learn about the local coffee makers behind Stone Creek and their commitment to limiting their environmental impact. Thanks so much for joining us right here on the listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.